What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason. With me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Back in the saddle. Here we are. Yeah, they thought we were done. They thought we were done. I don't know who they are. I made up a straw man of they.
Right.
But we're not done. No. Yeah. NBA history never sleeps.
Right. The straw man whose pronouns are they them has said, hey, yeah, they're done. There's no way they'll come back. Well, we're back, baby. We are back. It is another NBA season. It is another season of the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. Rich, I believe this is our 10th season.
That is unbelievable. Yeah, I think you're right. And that it seems hard to believe. We're going to now have to start recapping our old shows. We're going to have to go back to.
Sure. Yes. Right.
I mean, we are probably due for at some point pretty soon, you know, going over the 50 greatest players and kind of rehabbing that list again. You know, that might be due pretty soon as well. Yeah, we're there's a lot. That 10 years is a long time, man. That's crazy.
And there is. So it's been fun, but yeah, we have a subject. We intended to do this in September, and life got a little bit in the way because it's unusual for there to be major trades in the fall in the NBA. You know, September, you know, off season's pretty much done. You know, you're getting into training camp and you're getting into things, and you don't usually shake up things, you know, at that point or really early on in the season. But it happened twice this off season. Of course, first the Damian Lillard trade to Milwaukee. It says here, I thought it was Miami. I thought he was going to Miami.
No, it's Miami. Yeah, no, because he was. Yeah, I distinctly remember my man dancing in clubs while, you know, Will Smith's 1998, maybe 1999 hit Miami played. And
I remember that.
Must be it. We're off our game. We haven't done this in a while. So yeah, I must have wrote Milwaukee. I meant Miami. My bad.
We'll get back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, well, luckily it became timely again because the Philadelphia 76ers shipped off the disgruntled James Harden. I think we're going to just be calling him now the disgruntled James Harden. Yes.
Every year should start off with that.
James
Harden.
Disgruntled. Yes.
Shipped off disgruntled. So. You could do a Mad Lib. You could really do like Mad Libs. With, you know, all you need is James Harden is the content there. But it's like, you know, insert team here. You know, write down whatever team you want. Has traded a disgruntled James Harden to insert team here for insert, you know, player here. And yeah, it happens again. It's you know, mailman, the milkman. You know, these things are consistent stuff that comes. And James Harden being disgruntled and getting traded. And you know what, Jason? This time it's going to work. I'm positive
This time it's going to work. Positive. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about those two trades, and then we're going to get into some historic fall trades that kind of shook up their teams or the NBA or were historically important for some reason. First, yes, Damian Lillard's to Milwaukee. It happened September 27th, 2023. The Bucks traded Grayson Allen to the Phoenix Suns. Then Milwaukee traded Drew Holiday and three first-round picks to the Portland Trailblazers. The Suns traded DeAndre Ayton and Toumani Kamara to the Trailblazers. The big part of this, of course, Damian Lillard going from the Blazers to the Bucks. And then the Trailblazers traded Keon Johnson, Nazir Little, and Yusuf Nurkic to the Suns. And then there was a pick swap involved in there as well. So, of course, this is, what interesting, because Lillard, of course, is one of the two or three, if not the number one most, accomplished player in Blazers history in terms of like this longevity there, great player, obviously had been disgruntled for quite a while over the summer, as we jokingly said, everyone was like, oh yeah, it's gonna be Miami, I want to go to Miami, it seemed like it was gonna happen, Miami always gets what it wants. Well, not this time, you're Milwaukee Bucks,
take that Heat culture.
Yeah, exactly, Bucks culture now. So we'll see how it works out, certainly a big swing. And interestingly enough, Milwaukee becomes the third team in league history to get an all-NBA player after being the first seed. The other two, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. 2010, the Cavs, they made a huge splash. They got Shaquille O'Neal from the Phoenix Suns, Sasha Pavlovich, Ben Wallace, a second-round pick, and some cash. And Phoenix Suns, Shaq actually was on the all-NBA third team. The big cactus wasn't quite as washed as we thought he was, I guess.
No, I know. Everybody kind of always, I think a lot of people just assume that after the Heat, it's like, yeah, whatever. But there was a little bit of time there in Phoenix, particularly this year, definitely that he was still pretty solid. All-NBA third team, 17.8 points per game, 8.4 rebounds per game, 1.4 blocks per game for the Phoenix Suns. And he called himself the big cactus and didn't really quite get to, he didn't get to the NBA finals with the Suns, but it was a decent run, and the Cavs decided we need, to get a big man for LeBron, and
didn't go all that well. Things got a little prickly in Cleveland. The big cactus didn't quite live up to things after that, but what can you do? And then the one you probably could have figured this one out, the Golden State Warriors got Kevin Durant, who left Oklahoma City after averaging 28.2 points per game, 8.2 rebounds, and 5.0 assists, which was made him on the All-NBA second team, joining the Golden State Warriors. The 73 win, lost in the finals, blew a 3-1 lead, Golden State Warriors of 2016. So, and things worked out pretty well for them.
I would say that worked out pretty well. That worked out a little bit better than Shaq on the Cavs, for sure.
Okay. So, James Harden to the Clippers. Yeah. So the 76ers, they said Harden, PJ Tucker, and Philip Prustevit. Petru. Sure. Oh, sure. Okay. Sorry.
say something that starts with P.
Petrusev. Petrusev. Philip Petrusev. There we go. Apologies to those who would be upset that I pronounced that incorrectly. To the Clippers for Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, Nick Batum, KJ Martin, an unprotected 2018 pick, two second round picks, and a 2019 pick swap, and another additional first round pick from the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then the Clippers would ended up saying, there's some picks there. Nobody cares. The thing that was important is that, James Harden is now on the Clippers. And, the interestingly here thing, of course, with James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Paul George, the Clippers now have three of the top six active players in points scored who have never won a title. Which, So according to ESPN stats and information research, and there was another a good kind of deep dive on the trade in ESPN. And something that I had never really realized is that, in the same era, Westbrook, George, and Kawhi Leonard, all played in Los Angeles for high schools in the area. All four of them were, high school stars at roughly the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting, that they're going to have all four of those guys there. This is Harden's third time. Westbrook has been his teammate. Of course, they started in Oklahoma City, and then they spent a season together in Houston. This was Harden's third trade request in 4 years. So that seems like a lot,
It seems like a lot, His, his output is still good enough for him to kind of get away with it, but now this feels like the last kind of straw of it's like, all right, dude, if you're not happy here, I don't know, man. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's you. Maybe we should start saying, but it's, we'll see what happens with this team, obviously.
Yeah.
it's these guys are weird because they've all felt like they've been in the same orbit with each other for a very long amount of time. Obviously, Harden and Westbrook, like you mentioned, they've been teammates three separate times. Paul George and Russell Westbrook obviously were teammates with the Oklahoma City Thunder. The years after Harden left the Oklahoma City Thunder, like you said, they all grew up in L.A., that area, all kind of played high school basketball in that area. So it feels like these same guys have kind of been in the same orbit. And then you bring up that point, too, that's a great note about Westbrook, George, and Harden all being, you know, prolific, all-time great scorers, all-time NBA legends without a ring. And will this be the time when they can do it? I don't know, but I guess it's worth a try. If you're the Clippers, you got nothing to lose right now.
This
core is getting old. It's like now.
I think it's fine given what they gave up. And it sort of makes sense. I get why Harden wasn't happy in Houston. I get not wanting to play with Kyrie Irving. So I kind of get those two. And this one in Philly, it kind of seems like they pretty much, you know, he was set up in Philly about as good as you could be. It seems like there was a big breakdown in trust between him and Daryl Morey. So, you know, that may have been a big factor.
I think wanted a big bag of money and they were like, here's a slightly less big bag of money. It's a big bag, but it's not maybe as big as you want. And that kind of stopped everything.
That makes sense. Yes. And of course, this is not the first big fall trade involving James Harden. In fact, the most famously in 2012, on the eve of the offseason, the Thunder traded Paul Aldrich, Daquan Cook, James Harden, and Lazar Hayward to the Houston Rockets for Jeremy Lamb, Kevin Martin, a 2013 first-round pick that ended up being Steven Adams, a 2013 second round pick that ended up being Alex Abrines, and a 2014 first round pick that ended up being Mitch McGarry. So,
do you remember the Jeremy Lamb era? There was that brief period where people were like, I don't know, this guy's going to be able to fit in perfect. They're like, losing James Harden's big, but I think Jeremy Lamb could fit right in. And then there was the Kevin Martin era too, where, you know, his kind of funky 3-point shot, but he was an early chucker, you know, an early 3-point chucker, maybe born a little too early. It would have been perfect in this area. But I do remember the Jeremy Lamb era where it was like, I don't know, they're all Harden, but I think this guy's going to be able to fill in perfectly. And when it was all said and done, the most important part of that entire trade was the 2013 first round pick of Steven Adams, who ended up being a huge, huge part of that team that very nearly went to the NBA Finals and upset the Warriors and all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
And obviously he's still, you know, he's been hurt the last year and a half or so, but, you know, still an effective NBA player while all those other guys are pretty much all gone.
I mean, Kevin Martin was actually, you know, like, I don't think he ever was an all-star, but he was like very close to being an all-star.
Yeah.
Type
great for the Kings. Player. Yeah. Played well for the Kings when they were in the midst of their never making the playoffs run. But
I think the trade looks, it didn't look good at the time, but it looks a lot worse now than it did at the time. Yeah. And I mean, granted, like the type, like if somebody like Harden were traded now, even like pre like superstar, like even, you know, like, I think a good example is, the trade that the Hawks made with the Spurs. I cannot believe I'm blanking on
DeJounte Murray. DeJounte
thank
Murray.
You. Yes. I think that trade where the Hawks, you know, end up giving up two or three picks I think that's a good comparison to what Harden would, you know, a guy like Harden would have got had that pick happen today. I don't think the market was there for him. I mean, I definitely think they didn't make a good trade. And the idea of course, you know, you revisit the whole idea is like, hey, should they have traded him at all? I mean, a lot of it was money. I also do think that given the history that we've seen with James Harden, I'm not sure he ends up being, you know, really happy being a third banana to Westbrook Durant.
No. Yeah, that would have probably ended poorly.
Right.
In time, no matter what, but
he's not Klay Thompson. You know, he's not going to do that. So now whether maybe the Clippers ended up, or excuse me, the Thunder ended up trading Westbrook instead of Harden. I mean, there's the whole lot of what ifs there. We don't need to get into those.
Yeah, there's the Serge Ibaka. They essentially chose Serge Ibaka over him. And that, you know, looks laughable at times, but also it kind of, I mean, it did work out pretty well. I mean, that team was on the cusp of, they had obviously some major injuries. Westbrook was out a year and Kevin Durant won the MVP, and then Kevin Durant got hurt and then Westbrook won the MVP. And then when everybody was fully healthy, they were on the cusp of, you know, making the NBA Finals. And then Kevin Durant said, bye-bye.
But if they're able to work it out, it'd be like if you know, for whatever reason, Harden is like, I'm cool. Yeah, we can figure it out. I'm cool with, being this great team, you know, there's a good chance, of course, you know, the Thunder have Harden in that series instead of Steven Adams. Yeah, I mean, right. As valuable as Steven Adams was, like, there's a probably better chance that the Thunder beats the Warriors in that series. And there's a really awesome chance that the Thunder are the team of the rest of the decade, you know, maybe even over the Warriors. You know, maybe the Warriors don't evolve in the way they do, you know, if, you know, Harden stays on the Thunder. Yeah, a lot of what ifs there. And
Harden, too, like, I mean, people knew he was good, but I don't think people knew he was, like, this good. Like, he immediately got unlocked in Houston, and it was like, oh, okay, this is what this guy can do. And I'm sure even Oklahoma City was maybe a little surprised by, like, oh, that's what happens when you put the ball in this guy's hands all the time. Right. But that was never going to happen in OKC. I mean, he was very good for that team. Very, very good. Right. But
I mean, at best, he's like a James Worthy type. You know, that's kind of the career that he ends up having, which, you know, not a bad career to have, but probably not one that he's going to be super happy with.
No, I think he's probably made a lot more money and been to a lot more clubs.
A lot more MVPs been able to, you know, I mean, obviously he's one of the great scorers of all time of his generation and one of the great, you know, shooting guards of all time. So, yeah, worked out perfectly well for him individually. Now, you know, legacy wise, you know, be interesting to see how this Clippers thing goes. I think it's probably the last chance for him to salvage a legacy of, you know, being, you know, a guy who's really talented, but also, you know, a malcontent and, you know, kind of questionable in some of his choices. But we'll see.
All right. So we're ready for our first throwback trade.
We are ready for our first throwback trade. Absolutely.
All right. Let's do this one. September 20th of the year 2000. In the rear view at this point. We're good.
We're all good.
Yeah. September 2000.
We can make a big trade now. We're okay.
We're fine.
Yes.
Right. And the Knicks made a huge one.
Yeah.
Patrick Ewing traded away from the Knicks. This is a four-team trade back in the day when we had some real stupid big trades. Like, there used to be so many big, dumb trades where it was like, why are all these teams getting involved in this trade?
Why?
And there's a few questions about some of these teams that got involved in this one. So the Los Angeles Lakers trade Travis Knight, Glenn Rice, and a 2001 first-round pick, Jamal Tinsley, later selected for that pick, to the New York Knicks. Of course, they did not make use of that pick.
They weren't making a lot of picks back then.
No,
that was not
they were trading draft.
They were trading other picks all the time.
The New York Knicks, they traded Chris Dudley and a 2001 first round pick, future Jason Collins, to the Phoenix Suns, and the New York Knicks trade Patrick Ewing to the Seattle SuperSonics. A few more guys involved, but not many ones that really matter that much. The Phoenix Suns trade Luke Longley to New York Knicks. The Seattle SuperSonics trade Emmanuel Davis, Greg Foster, Horace Grant, and Chuck Person to the Los Angeles Lakers. And then the Seattle SuperSonics trade a bunch of nothing. Lazaro Borrell, Vernon Maxwell, in the dying days of Vernon. I didn't even remember the Vernon Maxwell Sonic era. Vladimir Stepiania, the 2001 second-round pick, a guy Eric Chenoweth, you don't even know who that is. Michael Wright, a 2001 second-round draft pick, and then a 2002 first-round draft pick, Kareem Rush, who was eventually traded also to the Knicks. They also did not make use of that draft pick. I remember Kareem Rush went to the Lakers, right? He was a Lakers draft pick, if I remember correctly. But
Weird. So we need to pause before we get into this because it's very important, but we need to discuss the 2000 Seattle SuperSonics, I think, real quick. So we got Gary Payton, which makes sense. We got Vin Baker. Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, makes sense. We got Horace Grant, you know, was like, oh yeah, Horace Grant was the Sonic.
Horace Grant and Vin Baker kind of the same player, but okay.
Burly
power forwards, I guess. Okay.
By then Horace is older, of course. But yeah, Brent Berry, okay, makes sense. Reuben Patterson. I don't think I remember that Reuben Patterson was a
I don't remember him as a Sonic.
Vernon Maxwell, he's
Seems fake. I don't even look it up. I'm looking it up. I'm not going to like what I see. I don't want to see.
He was fourth in minutes fifth in minutes on that team.
He is. That's Vernon Maxwell.
Sixth in minutes. Yeah. Yes. Rashard Lewis. 20-year Rashard Lewis. Okay, makes sense. Chuck Person is there at the end of his career. Was he in that trade?
I think he was in that trade. Yes.
Yeah. Most of the guys were in that trade. Yeah. Turns out they didn't like a lot of those guys. But yeah, that's a team. That's a bunch of guys. You got Shamon Williams in there too. You know, you got some names.
You definitely have some guys. Names. Yeah,
there are some guys on that team.
They decide that that's not working for us. We need Patrick Ewing. We're going to trade some things here.
Why not? Yeah.
But more than anything, it's the New York Knicks making a huge deal there to get rid of Patrick Ewing. And there's a New York Times article about the it's on September 21st, 2000, New York Times. Quote, after one embarrassingly botched trade attempt and several other false starts, the Knicks last night parted with Patrick Ewing, the cornerstone of the franchise for the last 15 years. A four-team, 12-player deal that was largely orchestrated by the Knicks and Ewing's agent, David Falk, will send the future Hall of Fame center to the Seattle Supersonics. Knicks general manager Scott Layden announced last night. So what kind of happened? How did we get here? Well, obviously Ewing famously got injured in 1999, and the New York Knicks, without Ewing, made a run to the NBA Finals. Now, this was the lockout shortened season, and they went to the finals and they lost to the Spurs pretty handedly. The Spurs, you know, beat them pretty good, but a lot of people started to, you know, wonder, well, do the Knicks really need Patrick Ewing anymore? Are they better off without Patrick Ewing? The quote-unquote Ewing theory that Bill Simmons would always talk about, did the team improve with Ewing out of there? And whether or not that happened or not, truth be told, Ewing was slowing down. He was definitely slowing down. He had been there for 15 years. Yeah, he was old. He had been there for 15 years. You know, he averaged 20 points per game pretty much since he came into the league. But his points per game, and more importantly, his games played, were plummeting over the last couple of years with the Knicks. And worse yet, his contract was not plummeting. He was still making a ton of money. And worse yet, in the New York Times article kind of lays this out, the Knicks were kind of hoping that Ewing would just quietly retire in honor as a New York Knick. Just kind of say, hey, I'm slowing down. Once my contract's done, I'm going to retire, and they could do the big send-off and throw his name into the rafters and yay Patrick Ewing and all this sort of stuff. But then he was saying that he wanted to play three more years. And moreover, he wanted a contract extension. And he was quoted as saying, if it's in New York, it's New York. If not, it's somewhere else. And that was kind of the big moment where everybody said, all right, well, the Knicks don't want to pay this guy. And this guy's clearly ready to, you know, get a contract extension. If it's not the Knicks, he's okay with leaving. And the Knicks never seriously considered giving Ewing that extension. And then the two sides decided a trade was going to be the best way to do this. Now, there were a ton of rumblings as well that Ewing wasn't exactly happy with being pushed down the pecking order behind Latrell Sprewell and Allen Houston, which makes sense given that, you know, those guys were on the come up while Patrick Ewing is like you said, 38 and getting a little bit older. Plus, he was also sick of being the scapegoat for why the Knicks couldn't win an NBA title, which I'm sure, you know, it isn't what that whole aura around rings isn't as bad as it is now, but it was bad. If you're the New York Knicks and you're Patrick Ewing, it was bad at the time. I remember even, you know, discussions of that in the 90s of like, why can't the Knicks get it done? Why can't they get it done? It must be Patrick Ewing, all that sort of stuff. So I can't imagine what that would be like, you know, in today's era, but in that era, it was still pretty bad. And then, of course, the 1999 run where they make it to the finals and, you know, quote unquote, almost win a title without him, made it very obvious that, you know, this relationship between the Knicks and Patrick Ewing was going to be done. Now, in late August, they had a deal ready to go for Patrick Ewing getting sent away. The four-team transaction would have featured the Knicks, Sonics, Lakers, and Pistons, and the Sonics would have gotten Patrick Ewing. The Knicks would have gotten Vin Baker, Glenn Rice, and Travis Knight. The Lakers would have gotten Christian Laettner and Chris Dudley. It's a lot of white going to the Lakers. Yeah. And the Pistons would have gotten a whole pile of junk of David Wingate, Vernon Maxwell, Lorenzo Burrell, Greg Foster, Tyronn Lue, just a bunch of dudes. Just a bunch of dudes going to the Pistons. Thankfully, Detroit, I guess, looked at what they were getting and went, wait a minute.
What are we doing?
This is a lot of guys. Doing this.
Yeah.
This trade's ridiculous. We're not going to get David Wingate and Tyronn Lue. That's not going to work for us at all. So it fell through. And Ewing was going to remain a Knick for a few more days at least. And then in September, the deal gets done. And Scott Lane said, it became clear that he was looking for change. And when he requested a trade, we respected his request. It was important in doing so, however, that we had the ability to add value. And with Glenn Rice and his all-star credentials, as well as two veteran big men and draft picks, we believe we have done that. So Ewing then was gone from the Knicks after being the number one pick in the 1985 NBA draft. The franchise savior did make the Knicks more routinely competitive than they had been in many, many, many years. The 80s were very up and down for the Knicks, obviously. The 70s, they stand on themselves. That's the era of Knicks basketball. That's how they became the legendary team of you know, that the New York Knicks are. 80s, up and down. 90s got a lot better because of Patrick Ewing. You know, a couple years into his career, they're a perennial playoff team. They're competing. Maybe they're not making NBA finals every single year, but they are definitely competing. And you know, they make the finals in 94 and 1999. And of course, 99, they do it without Ewing. But, you know, the rings, they never came. And one way or another, either the Pistons stood in the way, the Celtics stood in the way, Jordan stood in the way, then Shaq stood in the way. And then by the time we get here, it's just kind of over and it's done. And the New York Times article, not very confident about Ewing winning a title with his new team, the Sonics, is, quote, it is not likely that he will win his elusive title with the Sonics, who have the superior Lakers and Portland Trailblazers to conquer. But don't tell that to Sonics GM Wally Walker. He had a different story. He also said in the New York Times piece that there were 48 different trade scenarios discussed between the Sonics, Knicks, and Lakers. That seems like a large number. Yeah. I don't know if that works out exactly, but he said, quote, getting Patrick accomplishes a big offseason goal of ours. Until we got on the conference call with the league this afternoon, I had no confidence that the deal would get done. There were many times we thought the deal was completely dead, but it got resurrected, and here we are. We feel great about it. The trade is not without risk, given Patrick's age and injury history, but he's still one of the top half dozen players in the game. We think it gives us a complete and excellent team. And that's a great way to end the quote. But he adds one more sentence here that goes, if it doesn't work out, we'll have cap flexibility next summer. So, well, it did go well, Jason. It didn't go great. And they got that cap flexibility the next summer as well. Ewing averaged a career low 9.6 points per game. He would go lower later. We don't have to talk about the Orlando Magic era.
No, Patrick Ewing.
It's just too depressing. Yeah. Less than 8 rebounds per game. Played 48 games, though. I'm kind of shocked that he played 48 games.
78 games.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. Right. 48 would have been more what I thought. Sonics Patrick Ewing would have played, but Seattle went 44-38 and they missed the playoffs entirely. And then he was gone and they got that cap flexibility that they wanted. And you know, the rest is history for, unfortunately, Ewing and the Sonics as well. And the Sonics, they'd be back to not contention, but they'd be okay in a couple years because Rashard Lewis would emerge and Gary Payton would hang around for a little bit and then they'd trade Payton for Ray Allen or whatever. So they stayed competitive until, you know, the last couple years until they obviously left them, you know, to go to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some of the other players real quickly that got in this trade. Glenn Rice, you know, there was a lot of questions about how happy he'd be on the Knicks because he did not really like being, you know, the third or fourth option on the Los Angeles Lakers. So what was he going to do in New York? And, you know, the quote says it's difficult to imagine Rice being happy in that role because he complained about his lack of involvement in the Los Angeles offense during the Lakers' March to the championship last June. And interesting thing about Rice is he was a free agent and could have signed with the then very hapless Chicago Bulls, but he decided not to. Rice, a free agent, received a one-year offer from the Chicago Bulls earlier this week, but he wavered on signing it as his agent, David Falk, who's involved in all this shit right now. He's doing everything here. Tried to broker another deal, and the Bulls finally pulled their offer off the table Wednesday afternoon. So he ended up with the Knicks as part of a sign-and-trade transaction, and he got a multi-year contract and then got sent over to New York. And he actually did accept that six-man role with the Knicks, but he wasn't super healthy, played only 72 games. He averaged only 12 points per game, and unfortunately, this is the last season that he averaged double figures in his entire career, as he'd be out of the league 3 years later. So there you go. And as far as the Knicks, they were not done dealing, presumably. There was other ideas that they were going to make some other deals here. They were also looking to send Allen Houston and perhaps Marcus Camby to the Hawks for Dikembe Mutombo. Some other sources said that the Knicks would trade Sprewell instead of Houston to Atlanta. Dikembe Mutombo never did get traded to the Knicks at that time. He did, though, sign with them later in October of 2003. And so as far as how everybody fared, the NBA champion Lakers, you know, they were on the verge of losing Rice on the free agent market, getting another thing in return. They get Horace Grant. He fills in perfectly at power forward. Rick Fox gets a bigger role and, you know, they win another title. They do fine. The Sonics, they were middling, and Ewing was a shell of his former self. They won 44 games, and then he left, and then he was off to Orlando the next season. And as I said, they got good again in a couple years. But the Suns, I don't really know what they were doing here. They won two fewer games than they did the year prior. Stayed solid. They won 51 games still, but lost to the Sacramento Kings in the first round of the playoffs. And this brings us to the Knicks, which is going to be a theme of this entire series, that these teams that are involved in these trades doesn't always work out great. Because the Knicks, they were ready to move out of Ewing's shadow and give the keys to Allen Houston and Latrell Sprewell. So a year after making it to the Eastern Conference Finals with Patrick Ewing, they won 48 games, and they lost to the Toronto Raptors in the first round. Then they missed the playoffs. 8 of the next 9 years to date, they have still never made it back to the Conference Finals. So the last time they were in the conference finals was when Patrick Ewing was still a New York Knick.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, our next one. This is going to be a fun one. The Spurs get Dennis Rodman. October 1st, 1993, the Spurs traded Sean Elliott, David Wood, and a 1996 first-round draft pick that ended up being Jerome Williams to the Pistons for Isaiah Morse, Dennis Rodman, a second round pick that was Antonio Lang, and a first round pick that was John Wallace. So, yeah. And the Spurs, you know, powered by David Robinson, they'd been one of the, certainly in the upper echelon of the Western Conference in the early 90s, they finished first and second in their division for four straight seasons. Unfortunately for them, their playoff success was minimal. They never got past the second round. They'd also come through a bit of a tumultuous season. So Larry Brown quit midway through the 1992 season. I know, Rich, that you're shocked by this.
Yeah.
Yes, because we all know Larry Brown is not a man who does that.
No. If he takes a job, man, he's sticking with it. You know what I mean? Like, he's going
stick
down
to it.
Whether the ship's going down or not, Larry Brown is he's the captain of that ship. You don't abandon the ship.
You don't abandon another.
You stay with it, man. And that's Larry Brown. You stay with the ship.
Yes. So hey, the Spurs, they were like, you know what? Let's do this. You know, Jerry Tarkanian, he's out of college. You know, it's like, let's bring in Jerry Tarkanian, UNLV legend. You know,
can he also like illegally get players to play for the Spurs? Like, I think they miss like one of the big parts of the Shark?
I
Tark the Shark as much as the next guy, but I mean, of course, big part of his thing was many times being able to get people that may have not. Maybe UNLV wasn't their number one choice, but he made it their number one choice, and he got. Right. I think the Spurs missed that part of the whole.
I mean, you pay players of the NBA, so you can't really like pay them more. You know, what right. I mean, I guess you can, but yeah, so it doesn't work the same.
He goes to free agent meetings, throws like a 20 on the table. He's like, come on, it's like,
okay. So yeah, right. So the Shark only lasted 20 games in the NBA, and then hey, they did end up with John Lucas, who led them to a 39-20. To finish to the season, and they fought a pretty good fight in the 1993 second round. They had a 6-game loss to the Suns, who of course eventually went to the finals that year. So
one thing about Tark that I've just
thank you.
I'm just not realizing. Sorry to bring this up.
No, please.
So he got fired after 20 games, 19-11 record. This is on Wikipedia, and it's got a citation here from a Las Vegas Journal Review about I think when he passed away about his life. It says here, and so. Tarkanian was fired after only 20 games with a 9-11 record. He received a $1.3 million settlement, which he used to fund a lawsuit against the NCAA. So did he just like...
Nice.
He was like, I need some money here. Let's see. I'll sign. Right. I'll take this deal. I'll get fired. I'll get a big bag of money. And then, hey, fuck you, NCAA. I'm going to sue your guys. So
I love it.
That's
how
you work. That's how
ultimate,
Tark the Shark. That's how it gets done.
Ultimate. Yeah. He's a hero as far as I'm concerned. All right. But back to the Spurs, they were good, but they seemed like they were in a classic case of good, but not quite good enough. Well, Dennis Rodman, he's available. The Bad Boys era had petered out. You know, many of the names were still there. Isaiah's still there. Lambeer's still there. Mark McGuire's still there. Dumars, you know, and then Rodman, of course. But yeah, by 93, they finished 40-42. They missed the playoffs entirely. And outside of Dumars, all the other key Pistons are basically at the end of their road. And even Rodman himself was not a spring chicken. He's 31. He got a late start in his career, but he led the league in rebounding for the two previous seasons. He was one of the best defenders in the league. He won the defensive player of the year in 91 and 92. Did enough scoring to keep defenses honest, you know, kind of spread the floor. He did very little bit, but for the era, did a little bit of 3-point shooting to spread things along. Wasn't actually that good at it, but anyway. He was an incredibly valuable player, and he was not quite as much of a zero in offense as he would later be in Chicago. Led the team in win shares in 1992, was all NBA third team that year, in fact. But by 93, struggling mightily with personal issues from our good friend at NBA Trades, has kind of a breakdown of what kind of happened in the 93 season. So he missed 20 games that year. October 9th, 1992, this is from a SI article. He missed the opening of the Pistons training camp, saying that his pending divorce and departure of coach Chuck Daly had sapped his desire to play basketball and missing all of camp. And then November, he was suspended for 3 games for refusing to go on a road trip. February 11th, 1993, police are notified after Rodman leaves a friend's house with a gun. He's later found asleep in his truck at the Palace of Auburn Hills. More on this in a moment. March, he was suspended for one game by the Pistons for skipping practice, and then 3 days later was fined $500 for leaving the bench during a fight in a game with the Bulls. Which that one I don't know. I mean, there was still a lot of fighting in that one. I don't know if that was like the if that one's quite as an indictment as it seems to be. The other stuff not so great. So all right. So before we get into the 93 incident, one great what if. Apparently the Pistons had thought that they had traded Rodman to Phoenix in September, but the deal crumbled because their sons, Richard Dumas, they discovered more drug problems there, which totally feels like a chance. I mean, is an the 94 Suns having Dennis Rodman is either an awesome chance at a championship or a disaster or both. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's probably both. I think that, I mean, he would have been awesome for that team. That would have been a whole different dynamic to that Phoenix Suns team that needed just like one more guy, you know what I mean? One more dude to especially with Dumas, you know, kind of, you know, not being around it. He's a big part of 93. And if he's not around 94, it's a big part of why I think they dropped off as much as they did and obviously didn't make the, you know, the finals again in 94. I mean, the disaster potential is massive with Barkley and Rodman. I mean, that seems like...
And Kevin Johnson, too. Kevin Johnson, yeah.
Right, and Kevin
and Paul Westphal is the coach. Yeah, Westphal is not a great, you know.
See it on the court. You could see absolutely that would have been a hell of a defensive team on the court. It would have been a really, really fun offensive team. Yeah, I don't know. It's
they won 56 games. They lost in the second round to the Rockets in 7 games. Yeah, Barkley only played 65 games that year, and KJ only played 67 games, which is probably why their record wasn't quite as good. Can you imagine Danny Ainge and Dennis Rodman on the same team?
No, I can't. I can imagine that lasting for 14 minutes until Danny yells at him and Rodman just goes, fuck this, I don't need to do it.
Yeah, Rodman murders him and, you know, yeah. Anyway, okay, so that's a fun one anyway. So, all right, so back to the February 93 incident. So Rodman later revealed in his book, Bad As I Want to Be, he driven to the palace late one night carrying a loaded rifle in his truck. He debated whether or not he wanted to continue living. Eventually, he fell asleep and was found by police who had been called to perform a welfare check on Rodman by a friend. He would say that in that moment, he had an epiphany. I decided that instead of killing myself, I was going to kill the imposter that was leading Dennis Rodman to a place he didn't want to go. So I just said, I'm going to live the way I want to live it, be happy doing it. He said he killed the person I didn't want to be. So, and he would later talk about how that changed his persona, you know, and then he started to be more, you know, he started to wear, dye his hair a lot of colors. He started to, outwardly be, you know, I guess showy, you know, obviously later on, you know, he would write his book, he would wear the wedding dress, he would do all these things to kind of get attention, which is not something he did as much during the Pistons days, but it's he sort of kind of, you know, that helped him change his mindset, I guess helped him survive that time in a lot of struggles. But there was, yeah, there's certainly a lot of acrimony between Rodman and Detroit over the way the tenure ended. There's a Washington Post quote from Rodman after some negative comments from his former coach, Don Chaney. He said, to hell with them. I helped them win 2 championships. Now I'm the bad guy. I don't associate with those guys anymore. I've got a lot of bad feelings toward that place, their system. Billy McKinney was the Detroit GM, said, hey, we hate to see him go, but it was best for all of us to get a new start. Isaiah Thomas said after the trade, I'm more optimistic about the season now than I was 2 weeks ago. We were building this team to beat the Bulls with athletic ability. I think our organization has to be commended for the move we've been able to make. Well, turns out Isaiah was probably wrong about his optimism about the Pistons. They only won 20 games that year. Isaiah's career ended with an ACL injury, and also Bill Laimbeer only played 11 games that year, ended his career. So that was the fork, the end of the Bad Boys officially. They did get Sean Elliott, who's like, Sean Elliott's a really good player. And it seems like he was going to be fitting in well with Detroit. Well, that didn't go well either. He played one season there and then put his worst number since his rookie year. He averaged 12.1 points per game, shot only 45% from the field and 30% from the arc. Detroit traded Elliott in the midseason to the Rockets for Robert Horry, but Elliott failed a physical due to his kidney problems. And then ended up going back to the Spurs for almost nothing for the 95 season. And then things would actually go pretty well for Elliott after that. Although there was a silver lining to this is that the Pistons were able to get Grant Hill out of that. So for being bad. So, and you know, you'll take Grant Hill, I guess, out of all that.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
Yeah. I mean, the Sean Elliott thing is pretty bizarre. It's one of those, it reminds me a lot of the Antonio McDice thing where like, you know, he's on the, he's on the Nuggets and he goes to the Suns for that very, very brief period. Then he's back on the Nuggets. The Elliott thing is always one that always, because I think in one of the NBA jams, I want to say Sean Elliott's like a Piston. And I'm like, Sean Elliott was a Piston for a very brief amount of time. And then I'm like, well, when was he on the Spurs? And I'm like, oh yeah, right. Before and after he was on the Spurs.
Right.
So
yeah. There's a handful of instances of that kind of thing happening, but yeah, it's always pretty weird. So Rodman, you know, as I mentioned, began his colorful hairdos in San Antonio. He dyed his hair blonde before his first game.
A little Demolition later. Man. Remember Demolition Man? That was all the rage at that
Demolition.
Time.
Right? Yeah. I'm going to say Demolition Man, underrated.
A very film. Good movie, yeah.
Wesley Snipes is great in that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, one of Stallone's best movies,
Great video game, too. I haven't played it in years, so.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever played that, but I'm going to have to look into that. So, yes, also, he did red, he did purple, he did blue, did a lot of colors in Spurs. Yeah, dyed hair always looks weird with a Spurs uniform. I guess I'm used to it with the Bulls, so it looks okay with the Bulls.
Right. I white looks perfect, and, like, Jeremy Sochan Sochan does it in. Yeah. But I do remember, like, when he was, like, it was pink. I don't know. Actually, you know what? I think I'm okay with it. I'm looking at some pictures. Actually, I do remember because the black actually is a pretty good.
I don't know if I don't like it. It's just weird to see. I don't not like it. I just every time I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, it's just kind of jarring to see. Kind of jarring to see Rodman in that uniform. It is jarring to see him with colored hair in that uniform for whatever reason. So. I guess usually I think of the Spurs as a more conservative team. Obviously, you know, with Sochan, that's changed a little bit. But anyway, yes, infamously, he had a relationship with Madonna during that time. There was a story of him allegedly calling the Spurs front office in hopes of connecting with him. I would love to know more about that story if that were true. And, you know, like at least at first, like Rodman, at least on the court, was not a bad fit for San Antonio. You can certainly see what the Spurs were thinking and adding toughness and rebounding. It's similar to what the Bulls were thinking a few years later when they got Rodman from the Spurs. And yeah, I mean, in addition to Robinson, the Spurs had, you know, Dale Ellis, Willie Anderson, Vinny Donegro, Nageli Knight, Terry Cummings, J.R. Reed, and Lloyd Daniels. So like solid, but obviously no one who was like really that great except for Robinson. But yeah, they finished with 55 wins that year. They were third in the league in SRS. They do lose in the first round to the Jazz 3-1. It was a 4-5 series, so you know they were basically kind of neck and neck. And then you know, one of the things that the Spurs GM Bob Bass talks about with the trade is like, hey, everyone thought we were a marshmallow team in making this trade. We feel like really improved in rebounding. He said he just wanted to win and would show us how to win. And Dennis Rodman, I think we have one of the most unique players that ever played basketball, and talked about just, you know, how valuable he really was to there. And Rodman did continue his streak of leading the league in rebounding. And in fact, in his second season with the Spurs, he set the NBA record for total rebounding percentage, 29.7. And then, yeah, they, like as we mentioned, they won 55 games in 94, and they won 62 games in 95. They would lose in the first round, 94, as we said. And then unfortunately in the conference finals, they would lose in 95. Before that though, of course, with the playoff flame out, John Lucas ends up being replaced by Bob Hill. And again, strong regular season, 62 wins. They got a boost from the return of Sean Elliott. They also added Avery Johnson. They got Chuck
Person.
I really thought
this Spurs team was going to make it like pretty. Yeah. I remember even as a kid being like, this thing rocks, man.
And Doc Rivers. Yeah. And they, you know, and again, 62 wins. Robinson won the MVP. Robin actually, despite being injured, I think only played like around 50 games that season, but he was on the All-NBA third team. He did have enough rebounds to qualify for the rebounding title. And, Again, on the court, things were about as good as, you know, you could expect them to be. But in the playoffs and off the court, well, it definitely the team was at odds. You know, things that Rodman did during his time in San Antonio, he headbutted Stacey King and John Stockton. He threw a bag of ice at Bob Hill. He pushed back after being ejected from games by refusing to leave the court. And this is from a My San Antonio article looking back at the era, by the way. Clashed with the team's front office. He faced multiple suspensions. He took a leave of absence. He injured his shoulder in a motorcycle crash. Played his 49 games during the 95 season. Then in the playoffs, he was sitting on the floor with his shoes off during a timeout against the Lakers, which led to a suspension. And then when the Spurs lost to the Rockets in the playoffs, and obviously Olajuwon smoked Robinson there, Rodman criticized Hill and his calls against the Houston team. Specifically, he called Hill a loser and then even blasted Greg Popovich, who was the general manager, saying their choices sucked. And then in his book, Rodman said that Popovich wanted to be the guy who tamed Dennis Rodman. And this is what he wrote. Mr. Military was going to make me a good little boy, a good soldier. He lost sight of everything else. And when he decided he couldn't do anything with me, he badmouthed me and gave me away for next to nothing. Then he pretended it was good for the team.
All right.
Yeah. Wow.
Tell us what you really think.
I don't entirely disagree.
Exactly. Yeah. That's probably all exactly right. What was going on at that time.
Yeah. And then, yeah, there's an SI article, you know, after the trade, and Robinson says, yeah, it was like a zoo last year. Now we'll just be able to focus on basketball. There won't
be garbage. You know, and very nice man, David Robinson, just sitting around, you know, just around the whole Rodman thing. You know what I mean? And just being like, oh, man,
I just want to play basketball. Yeah. And then Elliot said, yeah, we're a quiet bunch. We're probably the best team getting along wise in the league. And then, you know, and Robinson also said, yeah, after that playoff series, was like, yeah, for the first time in my life, I felt like I let my teammates down. It's interesting because there is I don't really buy into the idea that David Robinson was too nice to win. I mean, obviously he was just as nice later when, when he won championships with Tim Duncan, he just didn't have Tim Duncan at the time. So, but I there is sort of an idea of like, you want people to get along and you want them to be comfortable with each other, but you also want them, you want some toughness and you want some accountability to drive more intense performances and winning. So, you know, where is that balance? You know, basically, why did this not work in San Antonio, which would later be like, you know, the culture, you know, considered the best culture in the league for a very long time. And why did it work in, you know, like in Chicago, where I mean, obviously they got Phil Jackson, and he's also in a very different way known for having a strong culture. But you know, why did one work and not the other? And some of it, I assume, I think is coaching, and some of it, I assume, is personalities, and some of it is, you know, there's certain things that Rodman's not going to do to Michael Jordan that he's probably comfortable doing to David Robinson. But yeah, it's interesting dynamic.
No, for sure. Yeah, I don't know if I have a good read on the Robinson thing. I don't know if he was too nice, but yeah, maybe there was a little bit of that where, and maybe Popovich was, you know, once he comes in and coaches the team, maybe he is a little bit more of that hard ass that you needed, and not because, you know, like Bob Hill, I think he was always kind of considered like a very player friendly coach or whatever. But
sure,
yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's how we do see that the difference there when Popovich came in and started coaching the team, that it was, yeah, that edge was maybe added. Also adding, you know, Tim Duncan surely helped.
Sure,
him.
That helped.
It was just like, who cares if we're nice? Like, we're just better than everybody else. So it's like, you know what I mean?
Right.
We're all really, really good at basketball. So yeah, but it's interesting. Yeah. I always wonder about the Spurs in the 90s, you know, how things could have changed for them.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny. There's a Washington Post article after the trade. And then, Greg Popovich said, like, hey, big surprise, huh? You know, after the trade was announced. And then he said it was difficult to find a team willing to trade for Rodman. Then when it asked if it were a relief to be rid of Rodman, Popovich said, a big relief. We were without him for quite a bit last year. So it's not any different in many respects. So that's some shade there. And then, Robinson's feelings about it many years are interesting. And then he said this is an appearance on the Bulls Talk podcast in 2020. Dennis is a complicated guy. He's an easy guy to like because he has a good heart. He wants to play hard. He wants to do the right things. But as far as a team goes, he was so destructive to a team perspective. So, and like I said, would someone like Rodman have been able to work on the Spurs like in the mid 2000s when Popovich is you know, obviously coach, when they've established the championship culture, what they have Duncan, when, you know, and I'm sure that Popovich to a degree matured and changed from when he was in the 90s into what he was, you know, in the late 2000s. And, you know, the Spurs, again, they brought in some characters. You know, they had Steven Jackson, you know, but they didn't have anybody who was as strong of a personality or, you know, as potentially destructive as Rodman, and how many people are. But also, was Rodman someone that may have kept them from somebody like, you know, like Ron Artest or Lamar Odom or somebody who was kind of like talented but mercurial, you know? Right. Obviously, we don't know the answer, but I think it is interesting to see, think about how that experience shaped, you know, what their later, how they built those teams later.
Right, right, for sure. All right, let's move on to another one. It's a late one as well. November 3rd, 1995, back when the season used to start in November. Remember those old days where
I remember.
Halloween,
yeah.
Sometimes it would start, and now it's like mid-October we're starting these seasons. But November 3rd, 1995, the Charlotte Hornets trade Laron Ellis and Alonzo Mourning. Okay, Alonzo Mourning is the reason we're talking here. Pete Myers to the Miami Heat.
Pete Myers. Yeah, we talked about Pete Myers.
Pete
yes.
Myers there. To the Miami Heat for Matt Geiger, Khalid Reeves, Glenn Rice, and a 1996 first round draft pick, Tony Delk later selected. There, yeah, back to back Glenn Rice trades for me. Here you go.
Absolutely.
This is one of my favorite trades ever. Is it weird to have a favorite trade ever? I don't know. But
I respect it.
But it's just like a classic challenge trade that I like to call it. It's like we have our franchise guy, you have your franchise guy. Our guy doesn't really want to be here. Let's trade franchise guys and see whose franchise guy is better on our, you know, like it's just a full, like, yeah. And we're going to talk about why Mourning's gone or why Rice is gone. But I just love one of those ones where it's just like, you know what? Yeah. Let's just trade our top guys and see what happens. You know? This late into the season, you know, the off season too, just days before the season starts. It's pretty wild. And this one started because Charlotte Hornets owner, George Shinn, an important human being, he offered Alonzo Mourning an $11 million a year deal and he turned it down. They freaked out and they traded him. He says here he had no interest in it. He said, "No, you've got to get closer to my money," and it just broke my heart.
Poor baby.
George Shinn. Poor little thing.
Sad. Man. Yeah.
Won't somebody think of the owners?
Won't somebody think of the owners? Yes.
But Pat Riley was more than happy there to pick up the pieces. He then traded for Alonzo Mourning. Mourning said at the news conference in Miami, "I came here with the intention of being here for the rest of my career." And Mourning held up the deal for a day. He was unwilling to commit himself initially to joining a stripped-down Miami Heat team, but said that he changed his mind overnight. He says, "I was ready to get on with the season. I didn't want to start the year off in Charlotte knowing that I could be out of a Charlotte uniform every other hour. I didn't want to play under those circumstances." Now, there's some other teams that wanted to get involved. The Lakers would have to make Mourning an offer on the open market the next summer, pursued a trade. Charlotte officials said they offered Vlade Divac, which had to be like a... That had to be sort of like a weird, anyway, they weren't willing to pay more than $10 million a year anyway. So had to be some weird sort of like Kobe Bryant, like weird. Because at this, well, I don't know, 95, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like it blew my mind when I read that. It was like, imagine they just traded Vlade then.
Right.
They probably just keep Kobe, right? Like, I don't know. It's just so, it's I don't know. It was kind of weird. I see what you're saying. I understand that like. It's just a weird how those things all kind of came together. I know this was after the trade got made or whatever, but it's just some weird, you know, Vlade just keeps getting in the mix of these Lakers to Charlotte deals. But
Now the so if this happens, then the obviously the Lakers don't go after Shaq, and the Lakers probably don't trade for. Well, I guess they could have in theory still. I mean. I don't know who they obviously can't trade Divac for Kobe. So who could they have traded to? That's the real type of thing. That's interesting.
It's just wild. But pre Shaq going to the Lakers. So it's interesting there. But Glenn Rice is now on the Charlotte Hornets. They ask veteran Robert Parrish what he thinks about this trade. As in the New York Times article, he says, "It's a huge loss. You don't replace an Alonzo Mourning. That type of talent doesn't come very often." Parrish then called Rice a hell of a player, but let's face it, he's no Alonzo Mourning. Welcome to the team, Glenn.
All right.
Like, Jesus. He's just like, he's not as good as Alonzo Mourning. Hey, how are you, man? It's like, Jesus Christ. Can we be a little more happy about our new acquisition here? But you know what? Robert Parrish is too old for this shit at this point. You know what I mean? He's sure. Like, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Yeah, I've been here for, I've been playing for 40 years, man. You know, it's,
I'm 62 years old. I don't really care.
Yeah, man. I don't get, yeah.
Fired exactly. me, I'm already fired, basically.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Right. So the deal also was a result of the new labor agreement that abolished restricted free agency and set free players with early termination options, such as Alonzo Mourning and Shaquille O'Neal. Again,
right.
So there. Yeah. Hornets originally signed Mourning to a 7-year contract, but gave him an out after his fourth season. Under the rules then in effect, Charlotte could have then matched any offer. The Hornets had been negotiating with Mourning for 2 years on an extension. Their last offer was $100 million over 10 seasons, but never got it done. And then under the gun, Shin met with Mourning's agent, David Falk.
David Falk.
New price, $90 million over 7 years.
Falk. I believe that David Falk represented every player in the 90s.
I think he did, yeah.
So,
that Jordan connection really helped. It was like, you're Jordan's guy. Like,
all right, hey.
I want to be in every commercial ever, and it makes sense. So.
Right, yeah.
So Falk also gave his protect your assets speech, telling Shin if he couldn't sign Mourning, he had better trade him or he would get nothing back. Riley then stepped up, reportedly outbidding the only other owner who would have been willing to pay the $13 million a year that Alonzo Mourning wanted, Portland's Paul Allen. So, Mourning to this point had played 3 seasons with the Hornets, appeared in 2 All-Star games at a career average of 21 points per game, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists. When Mourning was asked what Riley expected of him in Miami, which opens the season at home against Cleveland just a couple days later, Alonzo Mourning said they hadn't discussed the matter, but Pat Riley apparently did discuss the matter. In his head, he said, I want 25 and 20. He wanted 25 points and 20 rebounds out of Alonzo Mourning. I'm sure there was a little bit of a Riley smirk there.
Probably,
I would hope. that bum, complete giant bust, Alonzo Mourning. He only got 15-5 in his debut with the Heat.
Wow.
So
yeah.
So what a bust. Anyway, Mourning would get the last laugh in terms of all this. He would play most of the remainder of his career in Miami, even as he battled, obviously, life-threatening kidney issues. There was that very brief Nets run that even I kind of forget happened occasionally.
Yeah,
I wrote in my notes, like without even remembering that, I wrote that Mourning spent the rest of his year in Miami. And then like a little part of my brain was like, why do I remember him in something gray? Like I remember Mourning in gray uniforms and I look, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. What is this? I don't like this at all. But obviously Mourning won a ring with Miami in 2006, mostly as a role player. As at that time, they were powered by Shaquille O'Neal. So there you go. Shaq and Mourning on the same team and Dwayne Wade. And then upon retirement, Mourning started working in the Miami Heat front office, and he is still there today. And the team has obviously been tremendously successful in the years since the trade. They lost in the first round during Mourning's inaugural year, but they made the conference finals the following year. They had 6 straight playoff runs until 2001. And then in the 28 years since this trade has happened, Miami has missed the playoffs only 6 times. And during that, they have 3 titles, 4 NBA Finals appearances, and 3 conference finals appearances. Now, the Charlotte Hornets, not as good. They missed the playoffs in the first post-Mourning year, but they ended up building a really, really good team around Glenn Rice and Larry Johnson, going as far as the Eastern Semis in 1998. And then after some retooling, the Hornets were back to being competitive in the East, going to back-to-back Eastern Semis in 2001 and 2002, thanks to new young players like Baron Davis and P.J. Brown and those sort of guys. By this time, though, the franchise, you know, once the toast of the NBA with their record-breaking streak of sellouts and their just perfect merchandise that everybody loved and was just everybody wore a starter jacket of the Hornets or whatever, they were broken beyond repair. Fans stopped going because of the owner, and the team moved to New Orleans, and Charlotte would lose their NBA team forever, and never again did a team play there.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Yeah. My mistake.
Right.
Another team played there.
Well, not
the Charlotte
2015.
Hornets came back in 2015. Duh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I tricked everybody there. They were like, hold on a minute. There was another Charlotte team, right? It's like, the current Charlotte Hornets came back.
Sure.
And they came back in 2015. The New Orleans Hornets became the Pelicans. And then the... Okay, my note. Again, we're off our games here a little bit. Something about a Bob... I guess there was a...
Bobcats.
I don't know what that is, but I'm all confused at this point.
So.
Anyway, all you need to know is the Hornets came back in 2015, and they made the playoffs in 2016, and they haven't been back since. So, not a team that really had a ton of success, obviously, anywhere really in this franchise's history. So, ever since this Mourning trade, they've really been struggling to get back to relevancy for the most part. And the Heat have just never not been relevant almost in that entire time. Brief, you know, Michael Beasley run notwithstanding, but otherwise pretty much been a competitive team since then.
Sure. Yes, exactly. So, all right. Now we got Allen Iverson. He goes to the Motor City, but in fact, it is Denver that revs up. This is November 3rd, 2008. The Nuggets trading Allen Iverson to the Pistons for Chauncey Billups, Antonio McDyess, and Cheick Samb, not the most important player in that trade. And yes, the Pistons, of course, you know, they had been, you know, a juggernaut for more than half a decade. They'd won the 2004 NBA title. They made another finals, and overall, they'd made six straight trips to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's seven straight seasons of 50-plus wins. And even after losing Ben Wallace, you know, for a couple years before, in 2008, they finished fourth in the NBA and SRS. They took a historically great Celtics team to six games in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, like, yeah, they weren't young, but they weren't exactly ancient. Like, Rip Hamilton was 29. Tayshaun Prince was 27. Chauncey Billups was 31. Rasheed Wallace and Antonio McDyess were 33. But you had Jason Maxey, who was, like, being pretty solid. You had Rodney Stuckey, who had been second team all rookie. I think people actually were thinking a lot of Rodney Stuckey at that point. Didn't really work out so well. But, you know,
I was like Rodney Stuckey. He was a bucket before they called people buckets. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah. I think people were kind of looking at him as, like, potential, like, all-star type level player, and it never got there, but, you know, he was fun. They had Aaron Afalo, who I was also like kind of a, like a, you know, young talented guy. So, like, they had, you know, they weren't exactly in a bad place. They could have run it back and at least on the court and still probably would have been an effective team. But at the same time, the vibes weren't great. You know, Coach Flip Saunders ended up being dismissed after they, you know, lost that Eastern Conference Finals, even though they, you know, they had a great record and performed well. The culture of the team didn't seem great. So there were threats of more big changes. And after they won the first two games of the season, but you know what? The trade finally happened. Joe Dumars pulled the trigger, getting Allen Iverson for Chauncey Billups. Dumars, the GM, said it was the hardest and toughest move he'd ever made. He described Billups as a guy I have looked at as a little brother. And yeah, there were both short-term and long-term motivations to the deal, kind of like the Patrick Ewing trio, where Iverson had an expiring contract, which and also Rasheed Wallace had an expiring contract, which means that they could definitely make some moves with free agency. In fact, they would do that. Rip Hamilton also he was going to be a free agent, but they decided to extend him for 3 years, but they still had plenty of money in the offseason. I think they had more money than anybody did in the offseason. So, you know, they talked about, Dumars said, yeah, we just felt it was the right time to change the team. Iverson gives us a dimension that we really haven't had here in this league. 6 or 7 years is an eternity. Do you have a core together? And then it says it gives us a different way to attack people. We've been extremely successful for a long time, but I also think with that comes a little bit of predictability. So, and I get that. Like, I sort of get the idea behind it. But I think also you are, if it had been Allen Iverson of like 3 years before, this would have made a lot of sense. Allen Iverson by 2008 was definitely showing signs of decline.
Oh, yeah. 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 This. His body was starting to break down. He wasn't just, you know, he didn't have as much speed as he used to have. He wasn't as dynamic as he used to be. And then there was all the issues of, you know, what he was doing outside of the game. Was he really keeping his body in the best shape possible? Was he really focused on basketball more than anything? And this is when it really started to get, like, he still was Allen Iverson in a sense, but he wasn't Allen Iverson. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't that kind of guy. He could still do a lot of the same stuff he was able to do, but you could definitely tell that, like, this guy was starting to slow down and maybe not be the player he was. And one of the big issues for him was adjusting his game. It was like, you aren't what you were 5 years ago, which is fine.
Right.
But maybe we got to do, and he, you know, was kind of just, he was Allen Iverson. You know what I mean? He was him, which was great.
Didn't know how to be anybody else but Allen Iverson.
Yeah, exactly. Which made him as great as he was. And it made him excel and overachieve beyond anyone's wildest dreams. But it also limited him when his body started to break down a little bit as he got a little older, because he only knew how to be Allen Iverson. And then he definitely struggled in these next couple of years.
Right. And then, you know, in the 08 season, you know, he played all 82 games. I averaged 26.4 points per game before the trade. So, you know, statistically, he was still, I mean, performing really well. The 2 years in Denver, you know, the team had a high powered offense. They performed, very well. You know, they won 50 games in 2008, but they had lost in the first round for five consecutive years with Melo, and the last two with Melo and Iverson. So it was understandable that they would make a trade. And yeah, the Nuggets executive Mark Working Time said, like, the two teams had one common problem or challenge. I think the Pistons look at Stuckey and saw him as the point guard of tomorrow. And you have an all-star in Chauncey who was in his way. We're just thrilled the way that JR is progressing, J.R. Smith is progressing, and then he had a Hall of Famer in front of him. So you understand the motivation of both teams. George Karl, in a quote for the Denver Post, said when he was asked if the Nuggets are a better team today than yesterday, Karl said, I think we will be. He's the package that fits. Talked about how, you know, having lost Andre Miller as a top flight point guard was something that had hurt the team, even getting Iverson. So, yeah, and then not long into the season, you know, the trade looked like a big win for the Nuggets. You know, they ended up winning 54 games, which was an NBA franchise record. And it ended up being the first time in franchise history that the NBA history that they had won 50 games back to back. And yeah, Billups even said, like, yeah, I think the outside world looks at me and goes, wow, because, yeah, the Nuggets in their first 21 games with Billups, they went 16-5. Iverson and the Pistons went 10-11, although they did end up winning seven of their last eight games at that point. And definitely, you know, there are, you know, Joe Dumars says, hey, we knew acquiring Iverson would take some time to fit, but we've never lost faith in what we were set out to do. And, you know, they were still – they were talking a good game at that point, but it was very clear that Iverson was, you know, was not a good fit. He, you know, he went down to averaging that season, you know, only 17.5 points per game.
Yeah.
You know, his minutes were down. Pretty much everything was down. He only played 57 games that season. And you know, by the end of the season, and in fact, April 3rd, 2009, it was announced that Iverson would not play the remainder of the season. Dumars cited Iverson's ongoing back injury as the reason for his deactivation, although 2 days prior, Iverson stated publicly he'd rather retire than be moved to the bench, as Pistons coach Michael Curry had decided. So definitely not a great situation. In the meantime, Billups, he was the only Nugget to be selected to the All-Star game that year, and he led them to the conference finals for the first time since 1985. So definitely a much better finish for the Nuggets. And yeah, of course, it was not the first time that Dumars had eyed AI in 2000. Yeah. You know, they came close to a trade. The trade, one version of the deal according to ESPN was Iverson and Matt Geiger going to Detroit. In fact, it was Matt Geiger who ended up declining to waive a trade kicker for $1.5 million that kept the trade from happening. Eddie Jones, Glenn Rice again, Jerome Williams and Dale Ellis would have gone to Philly. Jerry Stackhouse, Christian Laettner, and Travis Knight would have gone to Charlotte. And Anthony Mason, Tony Kukoc and Todd Fuller to the Lakers. Anthony Mason and Tony Kukoc on the Lakers is a very interesting what if I think Mason was still good at that point. I think, like, because 2001 he like was like all NBA. I think he was
still
pretty
solid.
Good. Yeah, he was still solid at that point. So that would have been a really interesting one. I mean, obviously Iverson in Detroit is the most interesting one there, but regardless, yeah. I like Geiger's quote. He's like, yeah, I looked at Detroit and I didn't think Allen and I would have been better off there. Geiger said the time, so the decision was easy, but interesting to think of, you know, yeah, Ben Wallace being there, you know, of Iverson, and see kind of how that all worked. But anyway, yes, the Pistons finished 39-43. They were swept by the Cavs in the first round. In free agency, it didn't go much better. The Pistons, yeah, they found their men, but it was Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva.
Yeah, the great offseason where they spent all the money, right, and they brought in Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva. And
those did – I mean, both those guys were pretty good at that point. Like, not great, but, like, pretty good. Like, Ben Gordon was, like, a really good scorer. And both those guys
– for years. Yeah. They had both been consistent players for a number of years, and then immediately they both sucked ass.
They both sucked. Yeah, I mean, both of those went south as much as possible. And you know, later, of course, you know, there were other bad decisions by Joe Dumars, you know, the Josh Smith getting signed and for huge money. And then I think he was waived under, Stan Van Gundy, but, you know, bought out for with like 5 years remaining on that contract. The Pistons have only made the playoffs twice in the past 14 seasons. They have never won more than 44 games since this, and get this, the Pistons have not won a playoff game since Chauncey Billups was traded in 2008.
They haven't won a series, not a practice, a game.
They have not won a playoff game.
That's a long time ago.
That is a long time ago. Even the Charlotte Hornets have won a playoff game since.
Right.
Have the Orlando Magic won a playoff game? Well, they definitely have since then. Have they won a playoff game? I don't know when the last time the Magic won a playoff game.
There was a year where they made like, I forget what it was. They were even with some team in the play, and everyone's like, uh-oh, here we go. It was like, maybe it was the 2020, maybe it was the bubble year, or no, they've definitely, I think. They won.
They've won a playoff game? All right.
In 19, they beat the Raptors in a game. They still lost in the first round. And they beat the Bucks in 2020.
Okay.
It was the Bucks. I want to say they made the Bucks series 1-1 in like the bubble, and everyone's like, I don't know.
No, they won
the first game. That's right. It was eight versus one, and they won the first game, and everyone's like, this bubble's crazy. And then,
they got smacked. Okay, fair enough. All right. So I apologize, more Orlando Magic fans. Your team is not as terrible as I have.
Detroit visit. A game? They haven't won a game. One game.
Roddy Stuckey would later say, he would later tell Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press, I wish they wouldn't have traded away Chauncey, to be honest with you. I wish they would have took the San Antonio Spurs philosophy, keeping all their vets and get younger guys around their vets and doing it that way. You see how successful they are. After Chauncey left, that's when everything went downhill. Chauncey was the glue that held everything together and held everyone accountable. When you trade away that, you see what happens. Everything was just a domino effect after that. If I'd say one thing, that would be my thing.
That's crazy, too, because he was like the biggest beneficiary of that. And he's like,
in theory, right. It opened up time for him. And yeah, and also I would say, you know, in addition to Villanueva and Ben Gordon, it's like, Stuckey also, like, again, looked like he might be kind of like a borderline, like, all-star level type player. He looked at the potential for that. He fell off pretty quickly, too.
Yeah.
It was just like they had the worst out. I mean, they made some bad decisions, but they had terrible luck with the guys.
No, that year was ridiculous. Like, the second they tipped off, all those guys were bad. And it was like, what?
Right.
None of you were bad before. Why are you all bad now?
Why are you all bad now?
Ben Gordon averaged 20 a game the year prior, and then he averaged 13 with the Pistons, even though he got more opportunities to score.
Right. Like, yeah. That was a very, very strange season.
Bad immediately. It's so weird.
Right. Yeah. So, all right.
All right. Real quickly here as we get to the end of the show here. Golden State, they muscle up to win a title September 3rd, 1974. The Chicago Bulls trade Clifford Ray and a 1975 first-round draft pick. Joe Bryant later selected to the Golden State Warriors for Nate Thurman. And the background here, very similar to my, you know, the Glenn Rice, Alonzo Mourning trade that I talked about. Two good franchises, two franchises on the cusp of contending. They decide to swap big men to see if they can improve their teams. And Clifford Ray had spent the last 3 years with the Chicago Bulls, who had won 50 games each of the 3 years there under Dick Motta, as well as a real fun core of Bob Love, Chet Walker, Jerry Sloan, Norm Van Leer. And Ray was their big presence down low, a strong defender and a rebounder. Never averaged more than 10 points per game for the Bulls, but he didn't need to. He swatted away shot attempts and grabbed over 10 rebounds per game. He had a career-high 12.2 rebounds per game in 1974 and averaged 2.2 blocks per game that year as well. And the Bulls were good. They were a competitive team. They made it all the way to the Western Conference Finals, but they lost to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the Bucks. So as far as Nate Thurman, at this point, he's a Warriors legend. He's a seven-time All-Star who started with the team all the way back in 1964 when they were still the San Francisco Warriors. And they didn't score, or Nate Thurman didn't score a lot on that original San Francisco Warriors team because they still had Wilt Chamberlain on the team. So he spanned Wilt Chamberlain all the way here into the 70s. And he was remarkably consistent for the next decade plus. Once Wilt Chamberlain moved on, it was pretty much his team. And you know, the year before the trade, as he's even a little bit older, he averaged 13 points per game and 14.2 rebounds per game. And like Ray, he was a defensive stalwart, swatted away 2.9 blocks that year as well. It's one of the first years that blocks was measured as well. So you can imagine that these guys probably had several more, you know, great, great block seasons before this. But why did the deal get made? Well, the Warriors were looking to get younger and cheaper and retool, so they sent out their established, increasingly expensive big man for a still relative unknown-ish in Clifford Ray, you know, the fifth or sixth best guy on the plucky Bulls team or whatever. Sure. So, and the Warriors themselves didn't really expect to compete that year. They kind of thought this was one of the deals that was going to, you know, put them in a rebuilding phase. And so much so that their home arena, the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum, they booked the Ice Capades. It's always the Ice Capades.
Ice Capades.
It's always the Ice Capades.
Like, yeah. Right.
Ice Capades get, you know, Celtics Bill Russell, and the Ice Capades are going to Oakland. And so If the Warriors did happen to make the playoffs, which was an unrealistic thing for this Coliseum here, they'd have to play in the nearby Cow Palace in Daly City. But they said, probably not going to happen. They traded Nate Thurman. We'll see. Right. We'll find out what happened there in a bit.
Right. You don't want to bump a Ray Stevens main event, you know, in
Stevens. They may not even be able to do the Cow Palace.
Yeah, exactly.
Pat Patterson, Ray Stevens got to defend the tag titles. So
they absolutely do. Yeah, absolutely. You can't miss that. Right.
So there's a blog called From Way Downtown. Really good stuff. From-way-downtown.com. They recap and republish articles from past basketball magazines. February 13th, 1975 issue of Basketball Weekly talked about this trade, and they talked about Clifford Ray. And he said, people say if you don't win, it's because you don't have a dominating center, and I was always the scapegoat in Chicago. And so he was kind of thought of as like, well, we're not winning because this guy isn't good enough. You know, he's good at defensive. He's good at getting rebounds, but he's just not enough for us. And there was also this idea that he was possibly going to get traded to Philadelphia, but he had knee surgery and the Sixers got scared. He said, were it not for an injured leg, now scarred on both sides after 8 years of surgery 2 years ago, Ray this day might be a Philadelphia 76er. He was offered in a trade when the Bulls coveted a local collegian, Doug Collins, and the Sixers might have made the rookie available, but weren't willing to gamble on the 6'9" Ray's health. Ray believes it's all part of the game. He says, I've always carried that philosophy, and if Wilt Chamberlain can get traded, anybody can get traded. He's the greatest thing in basketball ever. That's why I don't worry about it. There's no problem in adjusting to that sort of thing. You just enjoy playing basketball anywhere. So he was happy to call San Francisco home. He says it's handled a lot better here. We lose as a team, we win as a team. This is the philosophy handed down by Coach Al Addles. It's paying off when you don't have to worry about dissension and ego tripping. So a little bit of shots over there at Chet Walker and Norm and Bob Love and all those, Jerry Sloan, all those guys.
Dick Motta, exactly.
Dick Motta. Right. But how did it all work out? Well, as we said, the Warriors didn't really want to do much, and Nate Thurman was going to a pretty good Bulls team. So Thurman goes to a 54-win Bulls team and unfortunately has the worst year of his career, a Ben Gordon type year for Nate Thurman. So not without some accomplishments along the way, though. On October 18th, 1974, against the Atlanta Hawks, in his debut as a Bull, can you even imagine this is how you debut as with your new team? He had 22 points, 14 rebounds, 13 assists, and 12 block shots, becoming the first player in NBA history to officially record a quadruple-double. Now, obviously, block shots were not counted before this year, so who knows? There probably was several ones before that, but hey, he gets the first quadruple-double. Alvin Robertson, Hakeem Olajuwon, and David Robinson, the only other players to achieve a quadruple-double in NBA history. But unfortunately, that was probably the high point of his year. His scoring plummeted. His rebounding and defensive numbers remained stout, but after making the All-Star game in each of the last two seasons, Thurman did not make it, and he would never make another one again. The Bulls regressed. They would win only 47 games, but they made a run all the way to the Western Conference Finals, where they lost in seven games to the Golden State Warriors. Yes, the Golden State Warriors improved by four games to win 48, good enough for first in the Pacific Division. They beat the Sonics in the semifinals and then, of course, beat the aforementioned Bulls in the Western Conference Finals. Head-to-head stats of that series, since if you're wondering, Clifford Ray, 5.5 points per game, 10 rebounds per game, 1.1 blocks per game. Nate Thurman, 2.7 points per game. Not great there. 7.4 rebounds per game and a 1.9 blocks per game. And then it was the Warriors versus the heavily, heavily, heavily favored 60-win Washington Bullets in the NBA Finals. And only once did the disparity in regular season victories between two teams in the NBA Finals been greater. And it was only greater by one game in 2006. Cleveland and the Golden State Warriors was the only biggest discrepancy in the NBA Finals. So obviously, you know what happens here. The Warriors sweep the Washington Bullets. Even though they had to move their games to the Cow Palace, which they did.
Yeah.
Even though their home arena was like, nah, they're not even going to make the playoffs. The Warriors, complete gigantic underdogs here, sweep the Washington Bullets. Average margin of victory in the 1975 NBA Finals was 4 points, still the lowest in NBA history, with two of the four games decided by 1 point. Clifford Ray stepped up big. He had 7 points per game, 11 rebounds per game, and the Warriors had their first title since 1956. And Ray would instantly become a Warriors legend and would spend the rest of his career with the Warriors, playing until 1981. And they were only competitive a couple more years after this, and then they kind of would, you know, fall apart. But this legendary team lives on in infamy, and Ray would end up becoming just a great, great, a legend in the Warriors. And I guess it kind of, what's weird about Thurman, and we'll talk about him in a moment here, is Thurman also remained a Warriors legend. So, like, both these guys became legends of the Warriors.
Yeah.
I live in Chicago. None of these guys are legends in the Chicago Bulls. It's like, nobody cares. Right. They play a video at the beginning of all their games that shows Cliff Ray and Nate Thurman, but it's just, it's 2 seconds and then they move on to. And now Michael Jordan's here and, okay, now things are good. So we, we cannot pass without talking about the greatest Clifford Ray story.
Oh, yeah.
I'll read it here. In 1978, Ray made headlines for saving a dolphin's life at Marine World Africa USA Amusement Park in Redwood City, California. A bottlenose dolphin named Mr. Spock had swallowed a bolt with a protruding sharp screw while maintenance was being performed on his holding tank. The park veterinarian was unwilling to perform a risky operation to remove the bolt from the dolphin's first stomach, where the object lay just beyond his reach. His remark that he needed longer arms led Marine World president and basketball fan Mike Demetrios to ask for Cliff Ray's assistance, as his arms measured at 3 feet 9 inches. With gloves, lubrication, and guidance, Ray successfully reached into the animal's throat and retrieved the object without causing any additional harm. Thank you, Clifford Ray, for saving the dolphin's life. So he's a Marine World Africa USA Amusement Park legend as well.
Absolutely, yes. I would say first ballot Hall of Fame
for sure. Yeah, I just love this idea that this veterinarian's like, if only my arms were longer, and this guy's like, ding, I got an idea.
Clifford Ray. Right,
let's call Clifford Ray. So there's pictures of this too. If you want to see this, there's a picture of Clifford Ray with his arm down a dolphin's throat, if you really want to see it. But
like somebody's fetish right there, but
right, if that's your thing, then
hey, no judgments here. We're a kink friendly podcast.
Yeah, we do not kink shame here. Yeah, but so 13 games in the next season for Thurman. The Bulls shipped him off to Cleveland with Roland Garrett for Steve Patterson and Eric Fernstein in Cleveland. Now 35-year-old Nate Thurman came off the bench for the injured Jim Jones to help lead Cleveland at their miracle at Richfield. So it just worked out for everybody but the Chicago Bulls, basically, as Thurman helps the miracle at Richfield team. They make the Eastern Conference Finals before the Cavaliers lose to the Boston Celtics in 1976. But at this time, he's getting older and hurting, and he would retire the next season. And like I said, it's interesting. Thurman would move back to San Francisco. Clifford Ray would remain a legend in Golden State. And both these guys just ended up being legends of the Warriors and never, really, causing any sort of the Bulls' legacy is non-existent for both these guys, pretty much.
Right, doesn't matter. I have two questions. Well, I have a fact, and then I have a question. So one thing that we didn't mention is that Clifford Ray apparently is the only person who likes Rick Barry. So because they like go fishing together, and they I believe are genuine friends. So so that's a fun fact. And
Clifford
then
Ray's
got
to either be the nicest guy in the world or also a giant asshole. I feel like he's a nice guy, though. So maybe he's
nice guy.
The nicest guy in the universe. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, And then also, I do want to now Clifford Ray also, not a big fan of Dick Motta, but I wonder if they ever, they made amends and perhaps they stay at the Bluebird Inn. Dick Motta's a bed and breakfast,
Yeah. Do some fishing at the Bluebird Inn. I don't know if the Bluebird Inn, do we know if it's near water?
It's at Bear Lake, so I hope so. It's not a lake of bears, I would imagine.
That would not be as nice. Well, no, I don't know. I think it'd be kind of
funny. Interesting. Yeah, I wonder if Clifford Wade reached into any of the bears' throats and grab anything.
Take some salmon out of their throats.
Yeah. Right, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's why. Maybe that's why Rick likes him so much. I don't know. Anyway. All right, so we're going to – a little speed round here. We're going to get some mini hits, some other big trades that happened in the fall. So a set of three here. So this is – the Nets, they decided, hey, you know what? We're coming into the NBA. Let's get Tiny Archibald. So they say, okay, the Kings trade Tiny Archibald for the Nets for Jim Eakins, Brian Taylor, and two first-round picks that ended up being Otis Birdsong and Phil Ford. Both ended up being pretty important for the Kings rebuild. And then, it was like, hey, we're going to have Tiny, we're going to have Dr. J, things are going to be great. We're going to make a big splash in New York. Everyone's going to love us. 40 days later, the Nets sold the player rights to Julius Erving to the Philadelphia 76ers. Archibald gets hurt and doesn't play a whole lot for the Nets. And then almost a year after that first trade, the Nets traded Tiny Archibald to the Braves for George Johnson. And two first-round picks that ended up being Michael Ray Richardson and Cliff Robinson. Not Clifford Robinson.
Yeah,
but,
not that Cliff Robinson, yeah.
Yes. And unfortunately, the Tiny Doc era never got to happen. But 1977, the Knicks signed Jim Clemens as a veteran free agent, and as compensation sent Walt Frazier to the Cleveland Cavaliers. We talked about how well that went in the past.
Yeah, not a very sad trade. We did it for one of our Christmas episodes. We had to watch a Cleveland Cavaliers Walt Frazier game.
And, yeah,
and not recommended. I would not recommend it.
No, not recommend that one. Okay, fair enough. And yes, September 1979, the Celtics, they decide, hey, we don't want Bob McAdoo here anymore. They trade McAdoo to the Pistons for a 1980 first-round pick that was a bit later Ricky Brown, another 1980 first-round pick that ended up being number one overall that ended up being Joe Barry Carroll. Of course, that ended up being part of the trade that got the Celtics Kevin McHale and Arthur Parrish. This was in exchange as compensation for Boston signing veteran free agent ML Carr in July. So, I could see a lot of Bob McAdoo, James Harden comparisons here, because this is like McAdoo's fourth team after, you know, his after just having been an MVP like 3 or 4 years later. But, you know, he goes from the, he ends up wanting to go to the Knicks. The Braves can't keep him. Then the Knicks ended up getting trading him to the Celtics. The Celtics don't want him, so then he goes to the Pistons. The Pistons ends up not wanting him. He goes to the Nets. He ends up getting released. He ends up, you know, kind of reinventing himself as a sixth man with the Lakers late in his career. But certainly the James Harden parallels, I feel like, are pretty apt there.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. Yeah. And I miss the days of the compensation. If you like signed a free agent, you had to give another team like a ton of stuff. And guys are like, I don't know, just take all these draft picks. We don't want them. We have ML Carr now. And
it's
like, there's so many trades where you look back and it's like, yeah, this is because they like some team will sign like a 38-year-old guy and be like, I don't know, take our next three draft picks. We don't care. We don't need them. We got this guy now. We're good.
Yeah. It's like, we're good. Who cares? Yes. Sixers in 1982 in September. They finally get They get Moses Malone. Yeah. Traded for Caldwell Jones and a 83 first round pick. Now, this was actually agreed to much earlier. It took quite a while for it to become official. So it was more on paper that it happened at this point, but nevertheless, it still counts. September 1984, the Milwaukee Bucks trade Junior Bridgman, Harvey Catchings, and Marcus Johnson to the Clippers for Terry Cummings, Craig Hodges, and Ricky Pierce. This is one of my favorite challenge trades and one of my favorite what ifs.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the Bucks kept their, because of making this trade and getting Cummings in particular, they ended up, extending the life of, they weren't a dynasty, but extending the life of them being a perennial playoff team, tough out, things had gone a different way, could have been an NBA finalist, but they ended up, keeping that window open because of this trade, even though Marcus Johnson at the time was, the best player in this trade.
Yeah, for sure. But no, this is a good one that really, well, nothing ever helps the Clippers, but certainly, what I mean? Like, it certainly ended up, being...
Right, and Johnson, obviously, he has drug issues, and then he ends up getting hurt early, young, he still could have been, I think, a good player for them had it not been for the injury. He was relatively young, 30 or 31 when, his career ended. So, obviously guys, tended to decline younger at that point, but I mean, there was a chance he still could have been. I would not say it was a good trade for the Clippers, but it worked out about as poorly as it possibly could have. It wasn't it wasn't like a bad trade for them. It was a trade that, was okay for them that just worked out poorly, I guess is the way I would say it.
Yeah.
All right. October 1985, the San Antonio Spurs part way with legend George Gervin to the Chicago Bulls for Dave Greenwood. Yeah, George Gervin and Michael Jordan. That's going to work out great, right?
I mean, two of the NBA's greatest scorers ever together on the same team. It's got to be good, right? Gervin was better than people think that year, though. Everybody thinks that he was like the corpse of George Gervin. And that was his last year in the NBA, and he obviously wasn't George Gervin of a couple years prior, but he still averaged 16 points a game that year. It's just, a little by little, it became clear that, that other guy was probably a little bit around.
And that's the year that Jordan, of course, you know, that's, you know, the year that he has the injuries out for a lot of the season, back in the playoffs. And I think Griff was pretty much out of the rotation by the playoffs, or he's very limited in it.
Yeah, he's limited. But even then, it's like, okay, all the rest of you guys, once Jordan's back, it's like, okay, Orlando Rule, Rich, George Gervin, all you guys, Gene Bennett, you guys are going to have to hit the road here because, like, this is the dude now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's
right.
Like, it's fairly obvious that this guy is yeah. But, yeah, there was the regular season that probably helped Gervin, you know, maintain those numbers a little bit. But, yeah, once the playoffs came, it was just like, okay, yeah, this is not. And then, like, yeah, he would go to Italy the next year or whatever. I forget. I think it was Italy where he played after that. But
I think you're right, yeah. And Gervin, by the way, yes, he played two games of the three in the playoffs and averaged 5.5 minutes per game. So he definitely was basically out of the rotation during the playoffs. So, yes. All right. Next, we've got the Rain Man. He flees to the Cleve, a three-team trade. The Cleveland Cavaliers traded Terrell Brandon, Tyrone Hill, and a first-round pick that ended up being Pat Garrity to the Bucks. The Bucks traded Sherman Douglas to the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Bucks traded Vin Baker to the Sonics, and the Sonics traded Sean Kemp to the Cleveland Cavaliers. We've said it before, Sean Kemp is actually pretty good for the Cavs.
Yes,
it was later on
that he got back. Respect Sean Kemp on the Cavaliers. He was still good.
He was still very good, especially that first year. He was excellent that first year. 1999, October, Scottie Pippen, 1 year in Houston, did not go well, and he doesn't have to deal with Charles Barkley's fat butt anymore. He goes to the Portland Trail Blazers for six players, Stacey Ogden, Kelvin Cato, Ed Gray.
Pippen quote, for the record.
No. Ed Gray, Carlos Rogers, Brian Shaw, and Walt Williams. That is a lot of guys.
That is dudes. Yeah, that was just like a whole bag of dudes. And
bag of dudes, yeah.
Yeah, and it helped the Trailblazers. Obviously, they got within, you know,
one game of the finals.
A really well-timed alley-oop and a monumental collapse away from doing it. But, those Portland Trailblazers teams of that era just blow me away. They just had so many dudes. They were like 10 deep, and then they trade half the guys for Scottie Pippen, and then the team's still like 10 deep. It's like that year there's like Detlef Schrempf there. There's just dudes. There's just guys teams, man.
There are dudes. There are guys. There are people. There are men. There are guys. Yes. All right, next. Speaking of guys, we got the Carmelo Anthony era ends in New York for the Knicks in September 2017 as Melo is traded to the Thunder for Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and a second-round pick that becomes Mitchell Robinson.
That ended up being great. Really well. Yeah. Ended up being a good pick.
And then Carmelo joining Russell Westbrook and Paul George in Oklahoma City. This, I believe, prompted us to make a episode of like all-time big threes, which is probably not aged the best for us, given the show probably aged fine, but the idea that, you know, Melo and Russ and Paul George was going to be an all-time big three. Didn't quite work out as well. But, can't win them all. And November 2018, Jimmy Butler's like, hey, I'm not happy. And the Minnesota Timberwolves traded him and Justin Patton to the 76ers for Jared Bayless, Robert Covington, Dario Saric, and a 2020 and a second-round draft pick that ended up being Matteo Spagnuolo. Yeah, this was not a good trade for the Timberwolves. They got a bag of they got a lot of nothing there.
They did not get a whole lot there. Yeah, and I don't even remember Robert Covington playing for the Wolves. Did they even keep him? That wasn't that long ago, but I don't even remember him playing for the Wolves ever. I'm sure
that is a good question. That is something we can find out.
I guess he did sort of.
He played in 2019 and he played in 22 games in 2019 and he played 48 games in 2020 before going to Houston.
Oh, he's been traded like 14 times since then, mostly just to Philadelphia. Yeah. It's just back to Philly. Usually in a James Harden related trade.
So right. It's it's funny how all that works out. Yes. Okay. And last, Donovan Mitchell to the Cavaliers. He was traded for Ochai Agbaji, Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, and then let's see, 3, 4, 5 first round picks. Yeah. Yes, a lot of picks. So, and that one has, I mean, honestly, kind of worked out for both teams. It worked out really well for the Cavs. Mitchell's been great there, and the Jazz have Lauri Markkanen has obviously been really great for the Jazz. Kind of something I don't think anybody really quite saw coming there. So, so far so good for both teams.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yeah, this was great. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this episode. And yeah, fall trades. So a long time coming. We apologize for the delay, but hey, we're back. And
yeah,
dare I say better than ever.
But, Eric Bischoff.
Better than ever. As good as we've always been. How about that?
Right. Exactly. We're not fading in our 10th season. We are absolutely strong. And we're not George Gervin. You know, we're keeping it up. We are not Nate Thurmond. We are definitely not. All right. Well, anyway. Thanks everyone for checking us out. You can find everything that we do at overandbacknba.com. We are on social media. We are on podcast providers. We are, you can find us at, the Step Back at, Fansided. We do a lot of things. So, check us out and, yeah, until next time. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again soon.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.